Good morning. This is Tracy Hales Vast with Right on Four Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM. Today, it's my pleasure to interview Stu Mossberg, author of In the Shadows of Canyon Road and Good Days, Bad Days. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tracy.
How is the weather up there in Bayfield?
Rainy.
Oh, I like rain.
Yeah, we love it.
You bet.
Always use that. We can use the water for sure.
Absolutely. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed In the Shadows of Canyon Road and the short stories.
Thank you.
Good Days, Bad Days. But they are very different books.
Quite.
Yes. So tell me about, well, first of all, why don't you tell our readers a little summation of In the Shadows of Canyon Road.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. I can give you some background on how I came to it.
Okay.
I love Canyon Road.
Me too.
It's one of my favorite streets in the world, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I first visited it about 25 years ago, and I was just on holiday, a brief holiday from New York, where I lived, and thought it was just phenomenal. And my background is art and design, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I also have some background in Mexico and Spain. And so it was particularly fascinating to me because it combined all my loves.
Oh, yeah.
And I went back several times over the years, and when I moved to Colorado, it's about almost 18 years ago now,
mm-hmm.
17 years ago, it was to write full-time, and it almost seemed natural for me to write a story about Canyon Road, and that's really kind of how it developed, instead of a passion and a love for the arts and a love for Canyon Road, and what part of Canyon Road most people don't see.
Right.
Unless, of course, you live there.
Right.
And that's really where the story came about. I really tried to find a way to explain to lay people who are not in the arts, per se, or particularly familiar with the gallery world and whatnot, what goes on behind closed doors.
Yes.
And that, in fact, is the prologue to the story. Addresses that issue. So
mm-hmm.
The story itself is, it's not a historical novel. It's all fiction. The characters are fiction, although probably based on some people I've met and
mm-hmm.
come across. I know a lot of gallery owners, a lot of artists, you know, so I'm sure I picked something up along the way
right.
with that. But the story itself is about intertwined characters and the relationships they have from one to another, sometimes unknown to themselves, but also the relationships they each have to Canyon Road.
Right.
So fundamentally, it's you know, it's storytelling through narrative and dialogue. And when I describe things, I try to be as authentic as possible.
Your descriptions are amazing, especially of the clothing.
Yeah, thank you.
I was really impressed. I could see those characters.
Well, that's what I hope to do with it. I, you know, lots of times when I write with the idea of it being a film.
Uh-huh.
So I visualize a lot of the settings and the characters and so forth.
Right.
So it's very descriptive in that regard. I would say that the main character in the story is Martin Gomez.
Mm-hmm.
And his connection to almost everybody in the story, except he doesn't know it.
Right.
You know, so
that's true.
He's a young painter. An unknown painter, and that's kind of what the story keeps coming back to. You know, he's a character that I love very, very much. He's a very sympathetic character, I think.
I do, too. I really liked him.
Yeah.
But you have so many other stories within there, like a love story.
Yeah. Well, we do. I talk about artists and mm-hmm. the relationship to galleries and some of the underhanded business that goes on. I know and gallery owners listening aren't going to be pleased with that, but
okay.
there is a certain amount of competitiveness,
yeah.
in particular on Canyon Road, which has so many galleries.
Right.
You know, it's there has to be some competition involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to get into that, behind the scenes of what it's like, what a gallery does, how they find their artists, how they price their work, you know,
right.
how they deal with their customers and clients, and do it in an interesting way, not a didactic way, you know.
Mm-hmm. And there are nice gallery owners and there are not so nice gallery owners in this book.
Very true. Mm-hmm. It's the world, a microcosm.
Exactly. It was. It was like its own little world there.
Well, it is, too. I think that is the case with Canyon Road. It is so, you know, it's not insulated necessary, but it is so, you know, it's so concise.
Yes.
And there's an intensity to it. You can spend literally weeks going from one gallery to another, which I love about it.
And tell us a little bit about your book of short stories also.
Yeah, that's called Good Days, Bad Days.
Right.
And basically that's what it is. It's it's ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances. And there are 31 short stories. And it's a collection that I put together over a long period of time. My inspiration for it is purely out of curiosity and looking into things and then wondering what if, you know, so... There's something for everybody in there.
There are a wide variety of stories, for sure.
Yeah. There's human interest, there's murder mysteries,
yes.
Science fiction and fantasy, unconventional romance.
Right.
You know, there's even some historical information,
right.
Stories in there. So
some family drama.
That interests me. I'm sorry?
Family drama.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Douglas and Louise.
That's
in
right.
Particular. Right.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, there's so many stories in there. There's only one story in there that had been previously published, and that is the one called White Ghost, which is a story of a man and his dog, sort of Jack Londonist,
right?
You know, lost in the tundra and up in Alaska, and there's a story between them and finding some mysterious creature out in the tundra,
right?
One leaving the reader to wonder whether it's real or it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, the other stories were all, that's the first time they've been published.
Well, they're very tight and they move really quickly, but yet tell full stories. There's such a different art to the short story.
Mm-hmm.
And you've done really well with that. And the
Thank
endings,
you.
Bam.
Well, they're all supposed to be surprise endings.
And they are, yes.
You want to sort of like, whoa, I didn't see that coming.
Exactly. You know,
that's my hope with that. And to your point, I think short stories, it's such a different genre for a writer. You have to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know, you have to resolve it in a very short period.
Right.
Rather than having 400 or 500 pages to deal with it.
Yes.
And that's a challenge, which, you know, excites me.
Which do you prefer writing?
I think the short stories because of the expediency, but you know
right.
what? It takes just as long to write it.
It does.
But I do. I enjoy that because I can get to resolve it. When I write, I don't. A lot of writers that I know outline things in advance. They work out the whole plot and subplots, the characters and all,
right.
In advance.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like the excitement and the mystery itself. I don't know from the beginning where it's going. I may have an idea, you know. Lots of times I'll have dialogue in my head.
Yes.
Between the two characters or three characters or whatever who's involved, not knowing where it's going. Play it out. You know, how does this sound? What does that do? So that when I sit down to work and to write, I have a general idea, but let it take it there by itself. You know,
let the story unravel on its own.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So you have all kinds of adventures behind you. Were you writing? I mean, in here in your book flap, it says you've bull ring in Mexico, Formula 2 race cars.
Yes.
Skiing, scuba diving, etc., yeah. Hiking, in all this, and
a
with
broad
your,
interest.
Yes. So, in all your activities, have you been writing the whole time?
I started writing as a teenager.
Ah,
terrible stuff, I might add. But
well,
but it was interesting that I had the wherewithal to do that.
Yes,
but I didn't write anything professionally until my adulthood. And my first two books were nonfiction books.
Uh-huh.
They were about design, one kind or another.
Okay.
Which was my profession, mm-hmm. the design business. But I loved the process. Having had some modicum of success with those two books, I thought, you know, I would really like to do, I'd like to tell stories of some kind or other. But I had a full-time job, and, you know, writing fiction would take forever.
Yes.
And I reached a point where I just said, this is really what I want to do from now on.
Oh, good. Good for you.
So I gave it up. I moved out to Colorado and started writing from experience, from my own personal experience and stories. And that's going back to what I said earlier about visiting Canyon Road. It stayed with me all those years.
Right.
And became the, you know, the story.
Did you, in fact, make trips back to Canyon Road while
yes.
you were writing?
Yeah, absolutely did that. I mean, there was not only for the emotional sense,
mm-hmm.
you know, to capture the core and the essence of the street, but to take footsteps in this, in the character, take the character's footsteps,
right.
you know, to walk through the Canyon Road like Martin might do,
mm-hmm.
or like Keith Wheeler might do, or Charles,
right.
To become more familiar with some of the locations outside of Canyon Road where some of the characters live. And then, of course, to do a photo expose. I took so many photographs.
Oh, I bet you did.
You know, and the cover photograph is one that I took as well, which
I selected
from I don't know, maybe 100.
Wow, I can see that, yeah. It's a gorgeous, typical Santa Fe adobe house, yes. So
yeah, that turned out to be perfect for that.
That's perfect. First, I wanted to talk about the artist, Paolo.
Paolo Rinaldi.
Paolo, yes. An interesting artist. I wonder how many artists are like that.
Yeah, he was one of the characters reminded me more of a romance character.
Yes, I
you know, I
saw
him parading bare-chested. And,
right.
Being very arrogant. And
yes.
Something like that. And he's the antithesis of Martin.
Exactly what I was going to say. Right.
Yeah.
Just like Keith is the antithesis of Charles.
Yep.
Yep.
Exactly. And that was a natural progression.
Uh-huh.
You know, how that happened to show both sides of it, as you had mentioned earlier.
Right.
The gallery world. There are good and there are bad. No reflection on my next book, but...
right.
That's really truly the case. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
absolutely. As is Barbara Dearborn,
right.
Hollingsworth, to stepdaughter Vanessa, or Moira.
Or Moira, yes.
They were very opposite.
Yes.
Yeah,
I liked Moira very much.
Lovely lady, right?
Yes, yes.
One of my favorite characters there is Marta.
Yes.
Rodriguez y Encantada.
Right.
The doyen of the art world.
That's right.
Yeah, she is a character that, mm-hmm. Probably an amalgam of people that I know.
She made a lot of decisions for, she made things happen, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In a quiet way.
Right.
Yeah.
And sincere.
Elegant lady.
Mm-hmm, I liked her. Do you want to read something for our audience?
I'd be happy to, yeah. The prologue.
Yes, that's beautiful.
The description, I think.
Okay.
For those listening, I think the Canyon Road locale is something that does stay with you as it did with me.
Mm-hmm.
So let me read that.
Okay.
The shadows creeping across Canyon Road bisect its buildings into chiaroscuro works of art, creating blocks of contrasting light and dark that inspired so many artists to move to Santa Fe almost 100 years ago. No matter how cold or hot it may be, the clay-colored adobe walls with their aqua and turquoise-trimmed windows and doors always offer a warm, inviting welcome, like low, sultry flames dancing in a fireplace. Their rounded corners beg to be touched and offer the promise of comfort as if they are old friends. It is beyond the shadows, behind the walls of the houses and art galleries, where the real stories exist. Maybe we can pick up with a little bit of Martin Gomez.
Oh, good, good.
Martin Gomez woke to the cawing of a raven, rose quietly from the sofa, knocked on the bedroom door to wake his sisters, and called to his brother to get up. "Hey, Russ, you better get into the bathroom before the girls do." Aunt Teja, a salt and pepper hair tied loosely at the back of her neck, scuffed about in the kitchen brewing coffee and fixing breakfast for the family. The whole house smelled of fried bread and bacon fat. Kissing her on the top of her head, Martin whispered, "Buenos dias." She smiled without looking up. Teja raced to catch the two buses that would get her to the Wheeler house to start her work day. Martin walked across the dusty yard to his studio. The tiny workspace was as cold as the early morning air outside, and he blew into his hands and rubbed them together before switching on the small heater. The paint on his palette had frozen during the night. His breath hung in the air for a second and then vanished. Martin squatted in front of the easel and stared at the canvas, deciding what to do next. Monday were his favorite day. No distractions, only his art, his passion, and precious daylight. He crouched for a long time, studying the colors that he had laid down the night before. Satisfied, he set about chipping the hardened paint from the palette. After futile attempts with the scraper, he resorted to a chisel to pry it loose. When the palette was clean, he squirted new paint onto the board in a clockwise sequence, creating a spectrum of color around the perimeter. He began slowly, stepping back from time to time to observe his progress, making tiny grunting noises as he painted, his round face turning this way and that, looking up and down, making sure it all fit the image he held in his mind's eye.
That's Martin.
That's Martin.
Was it difficult to write about art and describe the paintings?
You know, I'm glad you asked that question. Mm-hmm. I think that ultimately that was one of my key goals.
Mm-hmm.
To write this from an artist's perspective, but in a way that people who don't paint, who may wonder about it, what does an artist really do? You know,
right.
All I see is the end result.
Mm-hmm.
How do they work? And of course, I do get into their mind more, you know, Paolo being the other painter.
Right.
You know, how do they think? How do you see things? You know, as artists, you look at, really do see things differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, different details stand out. How do you decide, well, what goes where? You know, building a composition. And so I wanted to get into that in a way that people would feel it.
Yes.
If they were the artists themselves. That was the hope.
I actually learned a lot.
Hmm.
So
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, and I don't want to be pedantic about it. You know, writing in a way that, I'm sure the word pontificating, if you will.
Right, right.
You know, using big words just to be impressive.
Yes, yes.
I do try to explain, if I use an odd word or a peculiar word,
mm-hmm.
what the meaning of it is.
Well, it's definitely an intelligent book, but definitely approachable and readable.
Thank you.
As are the stories. As are the short stories you have here.
Yeah.
Which is your favorite short story?
Oh, not fair.
I knew you'd love that question.
That is a real tough one to do. I think, oddly enough, The Plan, maybe, the one with Harlan.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, you know, hapless Harlan. It's, I've known people like that.
Yes, like me too.
You know, and it's just, you know, it's just, oh my God, get real, will you please?
Yes.
You know, get a life, get yourself together.
Right.
You know?
So
there is, it's a moral tale in a way, but I would have to say from that, today, ask me tomorrow, I might give you a different answer.
I understand that, yes, completely.
Hidden, which is the story about the witness protection program.
Right.
The murder mystery. That actually started as a novel years ago.
I was wondering if it could have turned into a novel at some point, because it's a police procedural.
Yes. Yes, it is. And interestingly enough, I started that so many years ago, before actually I'd even been to Kenya Road. So we're going back 30 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I started that writing longhand.
Oh, wow.
And the manuscript that I was writing, pages of legal pages, I managed to leave in the seat pocket of an airplane.
Oh, no. Oh,
And this was before, you know, I really worked on the computer and didn't have Word.
And no backup of it.
And I just lost. I couldn't go back and do it again. I just was, like, so devastated.
Oh, you know? I can't even imagine.
But it stayed, the story stayed with me.
Right.
And I went, oh, okay, now I'm writing this. Why not put that in the short story? Work it out. Do that. So it is that, along with White Ghost, are the two longest, physically longest stories.
Right. But still, they tell a lot in a short amount of space. That one, the police procedural, reminded me of a really good murder mystery. Very visual also.
Thank you. Appreciate it very, very much.
Yeah, so one thing, like we talked about, that struck me is the difference in these books. I mean, stories. Each one of the stories is so different from the other ones.
Yeah.
So your mind must be going in all kinds of ways.
Working all the time.
Evidently.
I read, I don't read a lot of books, oddly enough. Sorry to say for my author friends, but... I read a lot of periodicals, journals, magazines, that sort of thing. Again, which are almost short stories in a way.
They are. That's true.
And I will come across something that really interests me enough to pursue it further. And then it's that what-if moment.
Right.
Hey, gee, I wonder, what if that? And I run with it from there.
Great.
Transparent, for example. I had read a story in Smithsonian Magazine about the uncovering of some Egyptian tomb that they had been exploring using, you know, robotic cameras, and I just took that further.
You did.
Went from there. Resurrection, you know, the study, the cloning DNA and things like that, again, are subjects that just, they're fascinating.
They are fascinating, and you took that to the nth degree on that one.
One of my favorite stories in there is Mr. Abaddon. And the story of, you know, greed. Just how far will you go?
Right.
To do something, or to win something, or to earn something.
Be careful when you say, I'd do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Really?
Are you sure?
That's Mr. Abaddon.
That's
Ross
right.
Erickson, yeah.
What are you working on now?
I'm not.
Okay.
No, I'm taking a hiatus at the moment.
Okay.
You know, occasionally I'll write a short story and tuck it away in a file in case I want to develop that. A lot of people have asked for a sequel to the Canyon Road.
I can see that.
And, you know, I've thought about it. I'm not sure. I've been there, done that. Do I really want to do it again?
Right.
You know, I'm not one of these serial novelists who keeps writing in the same characters and stuff like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Right.
They're very successful with it. But it's just, I like the idea of keep experimenting and exploring that. So.
And meeting new characters.
Yes.
I always like that part of it.
Yes.
Do you want to read something else from Good Days, Bad Days?
Sure. Let's see. We've been talking about Mr. Abaddon and Transparent and Hidden. Let me take something from Mr. Abaddon.
Okay.
Get through that quickly. Just for our listeners, give a little bit of background. Ross Erickson is the key character, along with Mr. Abaddon, in this short story. And it's a fairly short story. I think the opening paragraphs tell the situation, sort of set it up.
It does.
If you will.
Okay.
Ross Erickson was teetering on the cusp of fame. He had been toiling for several years as a C-list actor, and according to his two former wives, would always be a nobody. But that was about to change, or so he prayed. He had recently received high praise for a small yet key role in a much-touted indie film. There was even Oscar buzz suggesting he was a front-runner. Soon after the nominations were announced, Ross began losing sleep, fantasizing at night about his acceptance speech, thumbing his nose at ex-wives and do-nothing agents. The night before his inaugural walk on the red carpet, he lay awake practicing aloud, all the while believing he would not, could not win. The air in his tiny apartment above the dry cleaner was stuffy. A helicopter chattered overhead, and car alarms punctuated the darkness. Around 2 in the morning, he finally fell into a deep, almost comatose state. The voice began low and raspy, otherworldly, and it addressed him by name. Ross. Ross, it's me, Abaddon. Wake up! Who are you? He groaned as he came awake. What do you want? A cloaked figure suddenly emerged from a thick, acrid cloud and came so close to Ross's face that the actor recoiled in terror. Whoa! Don't be alarmed, whispered the creature. I'm not here to hurt you. I'm here to help. Help me? The figure curled into itself like water disappearing down a drain. Ross bolted out of bed to search for the specter under it, behind the window curtain, in the closet, but found no trace. He slumped on the bed and squeezed his eyes shut, trying to conjure the image of what he thought was more than a dream. That's the opener.
And that really catches the interest of the reader. Who is this?
You have time for one more? I can do...
Sure.
I can read something from Transparent.
Okay.
Transparent, as I said, is based on discoveries, mm-hmm. and they're continually discovering the ancient tombs here and there. The key character is Chester Swain, who is an Egyptologist who specializes in ancient Egyptian medical practices.
Right.
And there's a tomb discovered by some of his colleagues that goes back 4,000 years ago that's believed to be the tomb of a pharaoh's physician.
Mm-hmm.
So naturally, he, being an expert in the field, is called upon to come to see and witness the opening of the chamber. Restless from anticipation rather than fear, Chester barely slept and redressed at sunup, downing a cup of pungent Turkish tea and börek filled with cheese and minced meat. He woke the loudly snoring El Sayed and nodded at Garib, who was sitting on a camel saddle in the sand. The team was assembled. Logistics for the entry were reviewed, roles and positions defined for each of the participants, and most importantly, contingency plans discussed should any extreme measures be required. Within an hour, carrying halogen lanterns, they were inching their way along a labyrinth of tunnels towards a burial chamber. Accompanied by two assistants, one bearing tools for opening the crypt, the other video equipment to record the event. Standing outside the sealed entry wall, which they all thought must be where the tomb lay, Garib gave the signal to make an opening through the partition. Wait, cried Chester. Let me do it. If there is something, let me be the one. I don't believe in spells or curses. In a more serious vein, he added, but just in case. The assistant handed him a large canvas bag containing excavating tools and then stepped away. Garib and Amman shook Chester's hand, joined the assistants, and moved a few meters down the tunnel. Garib waved and said, Alam Arech. Thank you, called Chester. I may need it. His first thrust elicited a hollow thud, suggesting there was open space behind the wall. The second and third created a small opening the size of an orange, through which seeped a miasmic blue-green vapor that engulfed him. He dropped the tool and swiped at the gas, trying to avoid inhaling any, but it was too late. He coughed and spit, but nothing discharged. Chet, are you all right? Called Garib. Before Chester could reply, the wall in front of him collapsed, and he was enveloped in this gaseous substance. Waving his arms to ward it off, he stumbled backward and fell to the floor. In the short time it took for the team to reach him, the mysterious fog had vanished. Mr. Swain, Al-Sayed cried out, are you all right? What happened? What was that?
Oh, yes.
And you know the answer.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell. Very good.
Well, that was fun.
It was very fun.
Thank you.
Listeners can find your books where?
The websites like Amazon and Barnes & Noble have them.
Great.
Available. You know, here in Durango, Bayfield, the local bookstores have them because they tout local artists. Yeah, that's probably the fastest way to do it is online.
Well, I've really enjoyed talking with you and reading
Tracy,
your
likewise.
Books. And that was Stu Mossberg talking about his books In the Shadows of Canyon Road and Good Days, Bad Days. This is Tracy Hales-Vass, right on Four Corners, KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.